The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. 5 rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
Who's hosting tomorrow?
My show, Rena.
I hope she's far enough removed from Drew Pearson getting into the Hall of Fame to not talk about the Hail Mary. All right, go ahead.
You know, they only give me a few minutes to make this acceptance speech, but it only took 32 seconds to catch the Hail Mary from my quarterback, Roger Staubach.
He catches the ball. Touchdown, Dallas. Incredible.
You know, as the words...
I had nothing to do with it.
Were emerging from my mouth yesterday, I had a feeling, because here's the thing, that was not obviously during the show because of the language that was used, but anything you say in front of the microphone can and will be used against you by the folks in the control room. And I knew it at the time, and I thought if I just let it go, maybe they won't notice it, but they indeed did. And you know, when we only have so much time per week of footage we can use, why are we burning up 10 seconds for that? I don't need to see that play 50 years after the fact. Good morning, Shireen. Welcome back. It's been a long time since we've done this, whether it's PFT PM or PFT Live. Great to see you again. Great to be able to talk football for a couple hours. How's everything going in Texas?
It's going great, Mike, and I promise I wasn't going to bring up Drew Pearson. We are far enough away from the Hall of Fame situation. So I'm glad to be on with you and good to see you in this environment. I haven't seen you in a long time. It's been a while.
Yeah, it really has been a while. And the off season has progressed, and now the off season is over. And now we are fewer than 3 weeks removed from the start of the regular season and week two of the preseason, even though there was that Hall of Fame game that was played before week one of the preseason. Week two began last night in Philadelphia. New England Patriots at the Eagles. And I never care about the final score of a preseason game, but the Patriots kicked the crap out of the Eagles. And Cam Newton and Mac Jones both look pretty good. Let's start with Cam Newton. 8 for 9, 103 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions. And he has yet to run the ball in the preseason. I think that the focal point for the Patriots is get him to operate the offense, get him to make quick decisions, the decisions he's supposed to make, the reads he's supposed to make, get rid of the football, timing and rhythm, the stuff we used to see from Tom Brady, the stuff we're starting to see from Mac Jones, the stuff they want to see, Shireen, from Cam Newton.
Yeah, Mike, and I've seen a different Cam in these two preseason games, and granted, it's a small sample size, but I think that's what they've stressed during this offseason and now into the preseason is having him stay in the pocket and make the throws down the field, something he didn't do very well last season. He was more of a runner last year. I mean, let's face it. You look at the statistics, passing and rushing, and he was better at rushing than he was at passing, And he looked good, and he has looked good. And I think maybe we see a different Cam. And I wasn't as sold on the Patriots, I don't think, as you were. But after seeing him, again, a small sample size, but I think the Patriots might be pretty good. If he can do what he's done in these two preseason games and stay in the pocket and get the ball down the field, I think the Patriots could be a pretty good football team because they have the other parts. We know their defense is always pretty good. They have some weapons. I just think they look like they could be much better than they were last year, and they weren't a bad football team last year, even with Cam not able to get the ball down the field.
The throws that we just showed you, there is a rhythm, there's a confidence, and I continue to think of an observation that was made early in training camp by our friend Tom Curran of NBC Sports Boston, that Cam Newton was being too deliberate at times before getting rid of the football. You didn't see that last night. There was some movement in the pocket. That first one that we showed, he maybe held it a little bit long, but it allowed the guy to get even more open than he was. All of those throws look good. Again, 8 of 9 for the night. And the kind of growth in the offense that you would expect in year two for Cam, the weapons around him that he will have when the regular season begins, an upgrade over last year. I just think the Patriots, we just assumed they were 3-13 last year. Oh, they were horrible. They fell off. They were 7-9. They could have won more games. They were in a lot of games that they lost. I think they are going to be better this year, and offense is going to be a big part of that. Cam Newton and Bill Belichick spoke after the win about Cam's performance. Let's hear from both of them on how Cam did in his second preseason game of the 2021 season.
When you got the ball on a longer possession, you guys started fast too. Did you feel yourself in a rhythm almost right away with your receivers?
Yeah, that's one of our keys to win each and every week is to start fast and, given any type of opportunity, we had pretty much good field position. And we just had to uphold our end of the bargain. Coach challenged us, in the passing game just to be more efficient. And that's what we just tried to do.
Just overall, our efficiency was a lot better than it was last week. We actually gained some yards throwing the ball and converted some third downs. And then that leads us some points. So,
whenever you hear the same word from both coach and quarterback, that's a word that had been stressed many, many times all week long, efficiency. And that's what the Patriots offense was last night. And that's what the Patriots need, Shireen, if they're going to be as effective as they can be. Whoever is playing quarterback needs to be efficient.
Yeah, and they had almost 500 yards, Mike, and they ran the ball really well. I like all their running backs. I mean, I could point to four or five running backs who are really good for the Patriots, and I think that's going to be key for them. It's key for any team is to be able to run the ball and set up the pass, and they were able to do that. And you think about all the weapons they didn't have out there last night and that they're going to get back for the regular season. And, again, this could be a really good offense that I just didn't expect it to be that good going in this year. I thought they'd be a lot like they were last year. I know they've added a lot of parts, but it all boiled down to how was Cam going to play, and he just looked really good, I thought, in the limited amount of time he was in there. Now, the question becomes, again, like, when do you start thinking about playing Mac Jones? And you start looking at their bye week because that's kind of when teams kind of think about sometimes putting in that rookie quarterback. The Patriots have a really late bye week, Mike. It's week 14, I think it is. Week 14 is their bye. So it's late in the year. So I don't know how many teams are going to be eliminated at that point, but you're going to be looking at the Patriots' record as they get down to that week 11, 12, 13, thinking about, is this when they start thinking about playing Mac Jones? Cam's going to have to play well, I think, to keep that job. Because we talk about how well Cam's played. Mac Jones has looked pretty darn good, too, Mike.
Yeah, Jones was very good last night. 13 for 19, 146 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. But he continues to have almost a robotic smoothness to the way he gets the ball. He commits the drop. He begins the reads, and then he fires a strike, an observation Chris Sims made last night via text. It's almost like every throw he makes is a bullseye right on target, and it goes to an open man. You don't see him throw it clumsily into coverage or do anything stupid or anything reckless with the football. It gets out quickly, both from the standpoint of the decision-making process and when it's time to let it fly. He lets it fly. And it's so efficient, to continue the word that clearly was uttered many times in the meeting room this week. It's so efficient, you already take it for granted. And that was only the second time the guy put on an NFL uniform and went against an opposition. So I feel like they can't go wrong either way. And I think it makes it an even tougher decision as to what the heck do you do. And talk about efficiency, 13 for 19. In each of his two preseason games, Shireen.
Yeah, again, not a huge sample size, bigger than Cam's, but he's looked terrific. And you start thinking about comparing him to what Justin Herbert did last year. And a lot of those teams that passed over Justin Herbert, I guarantee you're having second thoughts this year. It's going to be the same thing with Mac Jones, the way he's looked so far. He just looks like he fits. And sometimes it doesn't take that long to see a rookie that he's going to be a good NFL player. I think I've seen enough, Mike, from Mac Jones to know that he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. I don't know that I need to see anymore. He just looks the part. Sometimes guys just look the part. It's like we always talk about in the Hall of Fame, like use your eyes. I've used my eyes with Mac Jones. I love the way this kid plays, and I think he's going to be a really, really good quarterback. I think the Patriots have found their next Tom Brady. Now, it's going to be up to Cam how long he can hold off Mac Jones, but at some point in the not-too-distant future, Mac Jones is the guy.
And I never expected Mac Jones to look the part, because at Alabama, he looked lumpy and clunky and out of place and like Bobby Lane after a long night out the night before the game. And he's transformed into something completely different in that Patriot uniform. And the way that he moves, that there's just a confidence that is there that you don't see in many rookie quarterbacks, where it's just smooth. Everything about it is smooth and efficient, and he's been there and he's done that even though he's just getting started. So now here's the question, and Sims and I kicked this around on Monday when we talked about last Thursday night's preseason game against Washington. If you start with Cam, at some point it's easy and natural to shift to Mac the moment that Cam earns the spot on the sideline. And we saw that happen a couple of times last year. He was removed from games for Jarrett Stidham. Now, Cam was always put back in the next week, but Bill Belichick wasn't bashful about removing Cam. I think the consequences are more significant if it happens this year, if Cam gets removed and Mac Jones goes in, because I think Mac Jones is going to seize the opportunity and run with it. But even though you can do that, Cam to Mac, if you start Mac week one, you can't really do Mac to Cam. You start benching your rookie quarterback. And I know Bill Belichick can get away with pretty much anything that the conventional head coach can't do, but you start to take a mallet to that confidence if you start benching your rookie quarterback. We saw it last year with Tua Tagovailoa, but then we learned after the fact it's because Tua didn't know the two-minute offense and the audibles and the checks and all these other things, so he couldn't stay in there when they were trying to come back and win a game. But I almost think that the natural progression here is let Cam play, and you'll know when the time is right, if the time ever comes, to shift over to Mac Jones.
Well, and Mike, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, the Chargers had a plan, right? And I don't know exactly what their plan was last year, but they obviously started with Tyrod Taylor and at some point planned on bringing in Justin Herbert. They thought they had a playoff-type team, so they started with the veteran quarterback. And, you know, one needle to the rib changed everything in week two, and Justin Herbert got the job and held the job. You look at the Cowboys with Dak Prescott the year he came in as a rookie. He was never supposed to play. He was a third guy. A couple injuries happened in the preseason. Suddenly he's in there. COVID is probably going to play a part in some things this year. We saw Cam go out with COVID. If Mac Jones gets that job, as you said, it's different than last year when you're starting a different quarterback for Cam Newton. If he gets that job, he's going to keep that job. You're not going to pull him out of the lineup. It's his job. So Cam's got to stay on the field. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay COVID-free. And he's got to play well to keep that job. Otherwise, you're going to move on to Mac Jones. And this does look like a playoff team. So they're probably going to start with Cam Newton, thinking they can get to the playoffs better with Cam Newton than with Mac Jones at this point. But Mac's time is coming pretty quickly.
Creates a ton of pressure on Cam Newton, because which mistake will be the mistake that results in the opportunity being given to Mac Jones? And as you said, once he gets the opportunity, Mac Jones probably will not relinquish it. And you mentioned the Chargers and Justin Herbert. I have a vivid recollection last year of Anthony Lynn, who was coaching the team at the time, saying over and over again, he's a rookie. He's a rookie for a reason. He's not going to play. We're going with Tyrod Taylor. And it wasn't until, as Sims labeled him, Dr. Needle came on the scene and punctured the lung of Tyrod Taylor with a painkilling injection before the Week 2 game that the door opens for Justin Herbert. And once he got it, he didn't let it go. I agree with you. I think Mac Jones will do the same thing. And that reminds me of 2008. The plan in Baltimore was that Joe Flacco, then a rookie, would not play that year. But the quarterback from Ohio State, Troy Smith, got, of all things, tonsillitis in the preseason, opening the door for Joe Flacco to play, allowing the Ravens to get comfortable with Flacco's ability to take care of himself. And Flacco started every game in 2008. And I mentioned Flacco because he started last night unexpectedly, because Jalen Hurts, the presumed starter in Philadelphia, ended up going from looking fine before the game to in the hospital for some sort of a stomach problem. Let's hear from first-year head coach Nick Sirianni of the Philadelphia Eagles as to what it was that was going on last night that kept Jalen Hurts from playing.
And Nick, what happened with Jalen?
Yeah, he came in. He wasn't feeling great when he came in. And so we put him through pregame warmups, and he wanted to go out there and go through pregame warmups. And, you know, he came back in. He still wasn't feeling good, and we evaluated him. We just decided that it wasn't in his best interest to play with what he was feeling. And, we evaluated him. He's fine now. He's doing okay now. But that's why we held him out.
He actually went
to the hospital to get evaluated for his stomach, and like I said, they came back, everything's good, and he's gonna be okay.
What kind of symptoms did he have?
He had pain in his abdomen, and which, you know, for a guy like that to tell us, you know, he's a tough guy, and so it must have been hurting him pretty good for him to let us know about that.
Was examined at the hospital? Did he go home?
After he was examined at the hospital, I don't know. I didn't get that. I don't know, so.
Nick, I think it caught some of us by surprise, because, like, we saw him pregame, he was dancing, he was spinning, it looked like he was feeling great. So kind of, you're saying he came into the building today before those pregame warm-ups, wasn't feeling good.
He was, yeah, correct.
And then, have you seen enough from him? I don't know what your plans are for the Jets game next week, but have you seen enough from him where you would be comfortable going into Atlanta, that regular season opener, without him playing in that final game?
You know, next week we have two practices against the Jets and two other practices. So, again, we'll evaluate how he's feeling these next couple days. But we get two practices against the Jets to further, like I've said before, those are like games. You know, those practices, those inter-squad practices are like games. So he's going to be able to get two more there. So I'm pretty confident that we'll get a lot of good work against the Jets.
At the hospital, I assume they ruled out anything serious. What did they leave you with? I mean, why are they telling you now he's dealing with it?
Just a stomach infection, stomach bug that was going on that was causing some pressure in his stomach.
He would have played if this was a regular season game, Nick?
I'm sorry, sir.
At the hospital? You're not sure if he went home?
He's not still at the hospital. I do know that, Sal. I just don't know if he came back to the stadium. I'm assuming he did, probably to get to car. I didn't see him after in the locker room. So, yeah, that's about all the information I have on that.
If it was a regular season game, Nick?
You know, I think that's hard to say. He really wanted to play. He really wanted to play. And we decided that just wasn't in the best interest of the team and of him. So I think that's a hypothetical. It's hard to say. He was fighting me and playing tonight. So I know he would have wanted to, but that's where you just got to lean on the doctors too and make a decision. And that's what we did.
Strange situation there, and not exactly the kind of interrogation that Nick Sirianni surely anticipated going into the second game of his coaching career. It is just odd. And I remember getting a text from you last night, Shireen, just before the game, that Jalen Hurts wasn't going to play because of an illness. There's this video of him before the game, and he does look fine. And I understand that you can have all sorts of stuff going on inside, but I know when I have a stomach problem, if it's so bad that I'm going to the hospital, I'm going to be bent over at some point. I ain't doing that. That is not happening. That happens after the relief comes, not before, if you know what I mean, for lack of a better phrase, as Sims would say. But I don't get it, Shireen. I don't understand what went on. I almost feel like they sent him to the hospital last night as cover. Like, we're going to get grilled for this. Let's just send him to the hospital so that maybe those people that are going to ask me all those questions after the game will accept the fact that it was real, because it sure didn't look like it was real based on what we saw before the game.
Well, initially, Mike, when you hear illness right now in these days, you think of COVID. So I'm thinking he tested positive for COVID or started showing symptoms of COVID and they pulled him out of there as a precaution. But it was not COVID related. They definitely said he tested negative for COVID. They did test him for that. He tested negative. So it was some sort of stomach bug, but it was just a weird situation to see him on the field dancing, doing all that sort of stuff. And then all of a sudden, now he's going to the hospital with this stomach bug. You know, whenever I've gotten a stomach bug, I've never gone to the hospital for it. So that's, to me, why it's weird that he would go to the hospital to be tested for a stomach bug. So maybe we'll get more information on exactly what happened, but it was really a strange situation. And this is a guy that needs that time. I don't care that they have joint practices. This is a guy that needs experience playing in games, getting those snaps. He needs as many reps as he can take going into the season, Mike, because he didn't get very many last year.
And reportedly, he'll be staying home for a couple of days with this stomach infection that kept him from playing last night. It just, there's something about it that just seems incredibly odd and unusual. And it is. The circumstances don't happen very often this way, where guy is on field before the game, looks fine, suddenly not playing, and goes to the hospital. I've had stomach issues. They never sent me to the hospital. You kind of have an idea of, you know, what it's going to take to get you to the point where you're okay, and there's a level of severity that is implicit in going to the hospital. That's what took it to a new level. And again, maybe the Eagles just wanted everyone to believe that he really was sick, because it would be very easy for the cynic to say they wanted all those people to come to the stadium on Thursday night to buy food and beverages and parking spaces and programs, thinking that Jalen Hurts was going to play, because if everyone had known Joe Flacco was playing, I think there would have been far fewer. I don't know what the actual through-the-door attendance was last night, but I think it would have been far fewer if everyone knew yesterday, you're not going to see Jalen Hurts tonight, you're going to see Joe Flacco.
Oh, and I thought about that, Mike, during the game. They're having to watch this game. First of all, Jalen Hurts isn't playing. Second of all, they're getting shut out and getting killed by the Patriots, which they didn't want to see. And you looked at the stands and they were pretty empty by the end of the game. And I don't blame them. I'm surprised as many people stayed around as did for the duration of that game, because it was an awful game from the Eagles standpoint. And I hope they got something out of those joint practices, because I don't think they got a whole lot out of last night.
They did get to see, if you showed up for the game, Devontae Smith, the rookie receiver, the Heisman Trophy winner, the player over whom the Giants leaped to get Smith, forcing the Giants to trade down and get another receiver, Kadarius Toney. 4 targets, 2 receptions, 19 yards last night for Devontae Smith in his first NFL action. And there's, you know, there's a little bit of an issue there. And, you know, it's going to take some time. He's not a big guy, and I know that that's not a big issue, but he's still got to get used to getting manhandled at the line of scrimmage. But he does have some raw ability to get away from guys, make people miss, gain separation with his speed. The cut there, the move to the inside. You know, you're going to have a hard time keeping up with a guy who is as quick and as nimble as Devontae Smith. He's just got to get used to life in the NFL. And he missed some time, a lot of time, with injury during camp. Look at that move. You can't defend that when a guy can move like that. So, you know, nothing spectacular, but enough that you can say, all right, yeah, this guy's, if he can stay on the field, this guy's going to be in a position to get open and provide some options to Jalen Hurts when Hurts is able to play.
And it was obvious, Mike, they were trying to force the ball into him to get him involved in the offense and get him going, get his feet wet, and that's what they did. And, yeah, he didn't look quite ready for an NFL regular season game, but fortunately for them, they got three more weeks to get him ready to do that. And he has missed so much practice time that he needed those reps, and he'll need all he can get between now and then, and he'll get a bunch more if he can stay healthy. And he's going to be a good player, Mike, I think. As you saw a couple of those moves that he made, as you said, he just looks smooth and get away from people. And I think he's going to be a good target for Jalen Hurts once Hurts gets back in there and they get time to work together. That's the other thing. They haven't had a lot of time working together yet.
On that ultra cynical view about the Eagles fans possibly not showing up if they'd known Joe Flacco was going to play, Sims and I noticed earlier this week, and when you look at the scheduling, it does seem like there are very few weeknight games. They're clustered on Saturday. I mean, I think they're doing everything they can to get people to choose to come to the games that don't count. They understand it's not the same as a regular season game. They understand that if you get season tickets, you got to buy those tickets. But it's one thing to buy the ticket. It's another thing to use the ticket. When you use the ticket, what happens? You show up. You buy stuff. There's more revenue that comes through the gates, and they're still trying to make up for all the revenue they lost last year. So one game last night, two games tonight, 10 on Saturday, two on Sunday, one on Monday. I think we're going to see this trend going forward where they put as many preseason games as possible on Saturdays and Sundays to get people to choose to come on out and buy the hot dogs and drink the soda and buy the beer and just spend some money here and spend some time here, not just buy the ticket and not use it, which I think happens a lot in the preseason. All right, let's take a break. Something else that happens a lot in the preseason, fighting, whether it's among players on the same team or, as we saw multiple times yesterday, players on different teams engaging in joint practice sessions. We'll talk about that when this Friday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
Mike, how would you rate the quality of today's practice?
Thought it sucked. Thought it sucked.
Why did it?
I don't know. I just, from what I saw, we didn't do very well offensively. You know, I don't think we competed like we did yesterday. You know, probably a lot of reasons, but, you know, just not good enough.
Mike Vrabel telling it like it is after the second day of joint practices with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Titans and Bucs play this weekend in preseason game number two. And this is a very common dynamic now where teams get together a couple of days before they're due to play in the preseason and have those joint practices. And conversely, Bruce Arians, the Buccaneers coach, who was upset on Wednesday, he was happy on Thursday because, see, if one team sucks, that means the other team does well. It's even in a practice setting, a zero-sum game, there's a winner and a loser, Shireen. But, I like the joint practices. I think it does make sense to get guys going against someone other than the guys they see all the time who are supposedly their teammates that they're constantly pushing and shoving and yelling and screaming at. But you got to do it the right way. And as we're going to be discussing, far too often it doesn't happen the right way. Far too often it does boil over into something more than football practice.
Well, and, you know, I started thinking, I never hear about the Patriots being in these fights. And so I Googled Patriots joint practice fight. Oh, no, they come up. There was nearly an all-out brawl a few years ago, 2016, against the Bears, and it comes up 2019. They had a fight. So they're involved in them, too. And I've never been, and I've probably been, I don't even venture to guess how many joint practices I've seen, 20, 25 in person. I've never seen one without a fight. They all fight every single time, and it gets so old. I mean, I think this is what they think they're supposed to do, and it's not. That's not the purpose of the practice. I remember a few years ago, the Cowboys and Rams went at it, and it was stopped early, and the Cowboys official told me, we're never having another joint practice with Jeff Fisher. His team, this is what they do. We're just not doing this again. And then, of course, you have these joint practices between the Cowboys and Rams, and what happened last week. They had another fight. So this is just what happens in these joint practices, and I hope they get something out of it, and they do, or they wouldn't keep doing them. But all we talk about after these practices are what? The fights.
Let's show those photos again. Antonio Brown was ejected briefly yesterday. He did come back after he cooled off. One-on-one drills with Chris Jackson, Titans corner. They got into it. Brown ripped the helmet of Chris Jackson off, and then I got to give him credit. You don't punch a guy with a helmet on. If you're going to punch a guy, get the helmet off first. Antonio Brown isn't going to break his hand. But you don't want to see those images. That's not what this is supposed to be about. And here's the irony, Shireen, and I hope I'm using the word correctly. Thanks to Alanis Morissette, I never quite know if I am. What has been one of the stupid, goofy distractions this week for the NFL? It's been all this talk about the point of emphasis on taunting, and we have to show respect for our opponents, and we can't get in someone's face during a game. As far as I can tell, the NFL could give two craps about guys beating the hell out of each other at joint practices. How do you reconcile that one, 345 Park Avenue?
And that's exactly it, Mike. They know there are officials there, but they're not going to – I mean, they're not getting 15-yard penalties. Who cares? They might – get kicked out of practice. For the veterans, hey, great, send me in the locker room. I don't care. It's one more practice I don't have to partake in training camp. So there is no recourse for this. And you heard Bruce Arians after they got finished saying, no, I'm not going to penalize guys for fighting. So what is the penalty for guys fighting? There's nothing. So that's why they fight. And this is what we would see if we didn't have officials in games and there wasn't a recourse. If there were no 15-yard penalties, if there were no fines in the regular season, in games, in preseason games, this is what we would see right here. We'd see fights the whole entire time because that's what they like doing.
And see, the fact that Bruce Arians won't discipline the guys who fought, including Antonio Brown, that tells me at some level they like it. At some level,
they want it. Yeah.
They want it. As long as you don't punch a guy with a helmet on. Don't do anything stupid and get yourself injured. And I could hear Bruce Arians giving that instruction in my mind's ear with a lot of colorful language included. But don't do anything stupid like punch a guy with a helmet on, and otherwise you want to mix it up a little bit, so be it. But I've asked this question in the past to the league after, I think there was a Raiders-Cowboys or Raiders-Ram incident where it almost spilled over into the crowd, if you remember that,
Raiders-Cowboys
several years ago.
Yeah, I was
yeah,
there.
And it was ugly and it was awful and it was right up against the snow fencing and you could see the players fighting and there's fans just inches away. It's like, this is an alarming scene. And the league's position was then that this isn't our jurisdiction. This is between the teams to deal with these issues. Well, maybe it should be in your jurisdiction. And I asked that question last night to the league, and I didn't get a response. And here's how it goes. When they don't want to answer me, they don't respond, and they force me to ask again. So I've asked again because I want to get confirmation that this isn't something that triggers league responsibility. It should. And I guarantee you, if the league was handing out $20,000 fines for fighting during joint practices, there wouldn't be fights during joint practices, or at least there wouldn't be as many. There needs to be a real consequence in order to stop the behavior. And if there isn't going to be a consequence to stop the behavior, the message is we're fine with the behavior. And that's the message that we're all getting. So in the same week that we're hearing about you can't get in somebody's face and flex, it's okay to get in somebody's face and punch. That's the message that we've gotten this week.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Mike, I haven't heard of a joint practice that didn't have a fight. Maybe there was, but that's all we talk about when they have these joint practices is how they were stopped. Some of them were stopped early, and You know, all the players came off the sideline. I mean, you can see it there. But every joint practice has some sort of physical altercation that shouldn't happen on a football field. This is not boxing. This is not fighting. This is football. And I know guys are fighting for jobs. And a lot of times it happens on special teams. And it's the guys at the bottom of the roster who are literally fighting for jobs who start some of those fights. But we also see it from big-name players. We saw it with Aaron Donald against the Cowboys last week. We saw it with A.B., Antonio Brown yesterday. So it's also some big-name players who get in these fights. It's not necessarily all those bottom-feeder guys who are fighting for those positions. And it's hot and it's intense. And I get all that. But you have to remain under control. You're going to have to remain under control in a game, so remain under control in these joint practices when you need to get the work in and you need to get the reps. And it does nobody good when you stop these practices early.
The Rams-Cowboys fight this year did not surprise me because the Cowboys are the Hard Knocks team. And there are coaches out there, and I remember when Sean Payton did this, the year that the Texans got the Hard Knocks gig, the Saints and the Texans were supposed to have joint practices. Texans get the Hard Knocks assignment. Sean Payton says, sorry, I'm not subjecting my guys to this, because what happens is with the cameras there, that's when guys puff out their chests a little bit more. That's when they're more inclined to show off a little bit. That's when they feel like any act of disrespect must be met with a response because the cameras are watching. That's when the environment is even more conducive to a fight. But as we've seen just yesterday, you don't need to have Hard Knocks there for the temperature to increase to the point where you can have these fights. And unless and until you hear someone like Bruce Arians, the coach of the defending Super Bowl champions, say it's not acceptable. Not just there's a boys will be boys kind of a shrug that Arians had. And I think other coaches are the same way, except the coaches who are, like Peyton, very aware of what can happen to one of your players if somebody is dumb enough to punch someone who's got a helmet on or gets caught up in the bottom of a pile or just gets injured some way somehow by the punch that he takes to the face. Like the Geno Smith thing, even though it was a teammate all those years ago. You don't want your guys throwing punches. You don't want your guys getting punched. But it's happening, which tells me at some level some of these coaches look at it as a net gain because it allows their players to prove that they're tough and they're willing to jump into the fray. And those qualities will come in handy when the going gets tough during football season. And I don't think that's the right approach. Because if it did, we'd see it at every practice. We'd see it at every joint practice. We'd see it at games. The hell with fines and suspensions and ejections. And I hope it's something that gets addressed, because it's really not the kind of stuff that you'll want. I'm trying not to be the old guy that's yelling at the cloud, right? I don't want that gif, old man yells at cloud, but it's not good for the game. For this stuff to be happening, it's not good for us to be talking about. It's also not good to be talking about injuries that happen in the course of football practice. Some serious stuff from yesterday for the Jets. Carl Lawson, a guy, Shireen, in whom they have a lot of hope for the 2021 season, out for the year with the torn Achilles tendon. Look, these things happen all the time. There haven't been many severe injuries in camp so far, but this one, a major blow for the New York Jets. They had high hopes for Lawson this year.
Well, and he had looked so good in training camp, too. I mean, he was their big free agent signing. They gave him a 3-year, $45 million deal to come in and be the pass rusher for this team as they convert from the 3-4 to the 4-3, and he was going to be the centerpiece of this thing. And now suddenly he's gone, Mike, and Robert Saleh and this team have to adjust and find a pass rush without him. And this is not going to be a playoff team. We're going to have a draft later on teams that we don't think have a chance to make the playoffs. This is one I don't think has a chance to make the playoffs. Still, nonetheless, you hate this for Carl Lawson. You hate this for the Jets as they're trying to build something here. You want him on the field. You want the best players on the field. And unfortunately, This is not going to be the last injury we're talking about this preseason. There's going to be more of these. There's going to be more of these big names, especially as you start getting to cut some of the cutdowns, and some injuries are going to come out again. We saw it last night with Jason Kroom, unfortunately got carted off, and you're going to see this some more as we go throughout these weeks. And that's the key thing for the preseason. Number one goal, get out of these practices and these games injury-free. And unfortunately for the Jets, they've already lost Carl Lawson.
3-year, $45 million contract that he signed in free agency with $30 million in injury guarantees, which comes in very handy because this year, done. Next year, sometimes it takes a little while to come back from something like this. And as we've seen with other players, and I believe this is a medical, I don't want to say it's a fact, but the reality is you become more susceptible to the other Achilles tendon going when you've ripped one of them. And I think Terrell Suggs is an example of a guy who, during his career, ended up tearing both Achilles tendons at one time or another. So it's a very unfortunate thing, but we know it's going to happen. We just don't know when, where, and to whom. It happens to Carl Lawson. Good for him that he got the contract with the financial security. Horrible for the Jets. And you're right. Last night it was Kroom. It was N'Keal Harry after the game in a sling. And we'll see how long he's going to be out. A guy who looked like he was on the outs for the Patriots, now working his way back in. Now he's got this injury to deal with. And I agree with you completely. The preseason games are meaningless. The injuries are meaningful. The injury doesn't care when and where and how it happens. It's going to be something that you're going to have to deal with. An injury they're dealing with in San Francisco, left tackle Trent Williams. He banged his knee on Monday. And they've been very circumspect about his status. Clearly, there's something going on there. He had his knee drained, so we'll see how long this lasts. But he's a guy that they definitely need. Whoever's at quarterback, they need Trent Williams playing left tackle for the 49ers this year, Shireen.
Yeah, and the problem with Trent Williams is he's only 33, but he's only twice in his career played all 16 games, and of course we're going to 17 games this season, and you need him in there. We know how important that left tackle is. Whoever their quarterback is, they want him as the left tackle. They don't want the backup, and I had to look who the backup left, what their options are at left tackle without him, and they're none of them are very good, as they aren't with very many teams. You just don't have that kind of depth, especially at that position. So they need him out there for most of the games, if not all the games. Need to get this right before they go into the regular season, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will continue as these preseason games are played to monitor very closely whether and to what extent the injuries happen. We'll have all the news on that at PFT because, again, you'll want to get through it all as unscathed as possible. Even though we know they're going to happen in the regular season, it just, when it happens during a game that counts, it still hurts. But at least you recognize you got to play the games that count and the injuries may happen. When it happens during preseason practice, preseason games, it makes it even harder. We had a serious injury for Ben Roethlisberger week two of the 2019 regular season. He's back for another year and he wants to get in on some of the preseason action. We'll talk about that when this Friday edition of PFT Live continues right after this. There it is. From the day I had jaundice.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
And you like to play, need to play, want to play in this team?
Yes, yes, and yes. Yeah, I would, like I said, I would love to get as many reps as I can. Just, it's been how many months since I've actually stepped on a football field to take a hit or play kind of, I know it's preseason, but still just meaningful type reps. And so with the newness of it, I definitely like to get as much as I can.
You know, the emphasis for this outing as it pertains to the quarterback position is getting Ben his first in-stadium exposure of the preseason.
Slight difference between the quarterback and the head coach about the objective for week two of the preseason for Ben Roethlisberger. And, this isn't as ridiculous as it may sound if you haven't paid close attention to Ben Roethlisberger over the years. I personally think, Shireen, that Ben Roethlisberger has seen how Dwayne Haskins has looked. He's heard the buzz about Dwayne Haskins setting himself up to be the successor to Ben Roethlisberger. And he's feeling a little urgency to reestablish the fact that the guy who won a couple of Super Bowls, the guy who's on track for the Hall of Fame, the guy who became Big Ben and is still one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, still hasn't retired. He's here. I'd like to let everyone know that. I feel like there's an element of that, of Ben getting sick of hearing about Dwayne Haskins and wanting to come back and show that it's not the Dwayne Haskins show just yet.
Well, I think there's also, Mike, a bad taste in his mouth for how last season ended, right? This team started out 11-0, and frankly, he was terrible down the stretch. And you look at the playoff game with what they did against Cleveland, that should leave a terrible taste in your mouth and want you to get back on the football field, and he hasn't had that chance yet. So the preseason gives him a chance to do that with a new offensive coordinator, a new system, and a few new weapons. Mostly the same guys are out there, but a new offensive line anyway to try to get – adjusted to them. So there's probably a lot of reasons he wants to get on the field. And maybe Dwayne Haskins has a little bit to do with that, Mike. But Big Ben needs to show that he's still got at least one more year left in him at 39 years old and in his 18th season.
Detroit Lions coming to town Saturday night to take on the Steelers at Heinz Field. And the other reality for many players, and the Steelers among them, they had no fans at all last year. So the idea of going into Heinz Field, that because it's a Saturday night game, because the fans weren't there last year, I suspect it will be fairly full. And it's the in-stadium experience that he will get at a minimum, according to Mike Tomlin. We'll see how many reps he gets. But there's no point. And this is part of the tension that Urban Meyer dealt with during the Jaguars preseason opener. He wants to play all his starters. He wants to play to win the game. He's not thinking, because he's got no NFL experience, he's not thinking this game doesn't count. It's a football game. It feels like a football game. We want to win the football game. And that's where you have to realize, you got to reel it in. You don't want to go out there and put yourself in a bad spot because you overdid it in a game that means absolutely nothing. But I feel like this is going to be the last year for Big Ben. I've believed that by the time we get to November or December, either the team or Roethlisberger will regret this one last ride, even though they're now saying, well, he could play in 2022. I think that the body's breaking down. He's on the brink of 40. He's not been on the TB12 method. And even when the report came out that he was, he disputed that. No, I won't eat that avocado ice cream. I think this is it for Ben. And, we'll see if it holds together for the Steelers, and we'll see what they can do in one of the more competitive divisions in football. Where do you put them in the AFC North this year?
A lot depends on Ben Roethlisberger. And, it felt like to me, Mike, that last year was his last year. I never expected him to come back. I thought he was done, especially the way he sat on the bench there at the end of the season after the game had ended, and he's sitting with a couple teammates. And it felt like his last season. And so does he have another season in him? Can he do it again? I mean, he's another year removed from elbow surgery. But it all depends on how he plays, frankly. I mean, we know their defense is going to be great. They're going to keep him in every game. They always do. They always make a ton of turnovers. We know what that defense is built on. We know what they're going to do. They're going to be very, very good. Is Ben Roethlisberger going to be good enough to get that team to compete with the Ravens, with the Browns? I would probably put them third now and have them in as a wild card team. We know how long it's been since they've had a losing season. They're not going to have a losing season simply because of that defense. They're going to have a winning record, but where are they going to be in that division? I still right now would put them behind the Ravens, and I would put them behind the Browns.
Those images of Ben Roethlisberger with Marquise Pouncey after the playoff loss to the Browns. And Roethlisberger had said in the past, I'm staying as long as Pouncey stays. Well, Pouncey left and He's gone. Still stayed. The offensive line has had major turnover. Alejandro Villanueva, left tackle, is gone. David DeCastro, Pro Bowl guard, is gone. Pouncey is gone. Kevin Filer signed with the Chargers. You got one starter on the offensive line back. And back before our hiatus, Big Cat tried to argue with me it's actually a good thing because they all stunk last year. You may as well play other guys. No. You don't want 80% turnover on your offensive line because those were the best guys you had. It's not like they went out and drafted and signed a bunch of guys who are going to come in and fill those spots. So it feels experimental to me on offense this year. You've got all these new offensive linemen. You've got Matt Canada, who took over the offense. It was too predictable last year. They got away from the running game. They were throwing the short passes. That thing that came out, and I think this came out during our hiatus, and we haven't talked about it on the show, the tell that someone spotted that apparently has been there for years. When Ben Roethlisberger's in shotgun, if his foot is flat, if his back foot, left foot, as he's getting ready to take the snap, is flat. It's either the left foot or the right foot. One of the 2 feet, the trail foot is flat. It's a handoff. If the heel is up, it's a pass. And apparently it's foolproof that that's been there. Now, number one, you got to get rid of that. Number two, presumably defenses have figured it out at some point. Number three, how the hell did they run an offense at all if they were giving away in shotgun formation every time, whether or not it's a run or a pass? Those are the kinds of things they have to iron out because they were too predictable last year and they didn't run the ball nearly enough. They used the first round pick on Najee Harris. They've got to establish the run. And look at where PointsBet has the Steelers for division winner. And as Shireen suggests, third behind the Ravens and the Browns, plus 460. Poor Bengals. But, look, Mike Tomlin will always make them better than they are. The question is, how good can he make this group?
Well, and, you know, Ben Roethlisberger threw 608 passes last season. I'm going to be shocked if he throws even close to that this season, and he shouldn't. That's why they drafted Najee Harris. They were so bad running the ball between the offensive line and the running backs that they did have to put it on Roethlisberger. I expect them to be a good running team this year, to get back to their roots, defense and a running game, and they'll be in every game and they'll pull out some games and let Ben work his magic late in games. But they don't need him throwing 608 times, which he plays all 17 games and he only played 15 last season, will be more than that. So they need to get that number down, run the ball much better than they did last year, and they'll have a chance to compete with those other two teams for the division title, Mike.
There is this element within the organization where they kind of tiptoe around Ben Roethlisberger, but some of the chatter last year was, for example, when it was an RPO type of a play, a run-pass option where he is in shotgun and he can decide whether to hand it off or throw it, he was throwing it. And he threw it too much. So you take that, you combine the tell, and we wonder why so many receivers are dropping passes that go 5 yards past the line of scrimmage when pre-snap, the defensive backs and the linebackers have a pretty good idea of passes coming, so they're able to load up and go after the receiver and try to jar the ball loose. Yeah, you're going to have more drops when the defense knows Juju Smith-Schuster's coming, you know, my way, and the ball's being thrown, I'm going to go hit him and try to make him drop the ball. Guess what? They're going to drop the ball when they know it's coming. That's a critical aspect of trying to make the offense work. So we'll see if Matt Canada can fix it. We'll see if Ben can get it right. And maybe it's not a Dwayne Haskins thing. Maybe Ben truly wants to be out on the field so he can get comfortable with this new offense. And the offense is going to be the key, because you're right. The defense is always going to be good. But this team is only going to go as far as this revamped offense with all those new offensive linemen, with the new rookie running back, with the old Ben Roethlisberger, with a new offensive coordinator. we'll take them. And it just feels like, to me, it's too many jumbled mismatched parts, like a Frankenstein monster. I choose to think they're going to struggle on offense this year, but we'll see. I'll happily be wrong, but I feel like it's not going to work.
Isn't it amazing, Mike, though, if he's had this tell, how competitive the Steelers still have been despite that? And why hasn't it been fixed to this point? I mean, the Steelers should have picked up on that, too, if other teams were picking up on that. But they're competitive every single year. They'll be competitive this year. It's just, how good are they going to be?
All due respect to the Steelers organization and the assistant coaches, but post-Bruce Arians, because Arians got retired by the Steelers. He's had a great football retirement, two-time coach of the year and Super Bowl champion since he retired nearly a decade ago. Mike Tomlin is such a good coach that he compensates for the fact that for most of the last decade, he hasn't really had a great staff. And I don't know how much say he has over the staff, especially the coordinators. I think somebody else higher in the organization hires like a Todd Haley, you know, and makes those bigger decisions. And Tomlin just deals with whatever he's given. But he's such a good coach that he can overcome that. Because I really do think, frankly, you know, it's not an all-star staff of assistants in Pittsburgh. And it hasn't been since Dick LeBeau and Bruce Arians. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I really do feel like there's an element of that in Pittsburgh, and Tomlin's spending a lot of his time trying to overcome that.
Yeah, and I hadn't really thought about that, Mike, and they do change coaches quite a bit. I mean, you don't see, as long as Tomlin's been there, those coaches stay with him, especially the coordinators, and perhaps there's a reason for that. I don't know, but I do agree with you how good of a coach Mike Tomlin is. And you think back a couple years ago, even last year to some extent, people were talking about Steelers fans, oh, Mike Tomlin needs to go. I'm thinking, are you crazy? I mean, there'd be 30 other teams wanting Mike Tomlin. Not really that many, because not that many would change teams. But he's one of the best coaches in the NFL, and you can't dispute that based on what his record is over the years. I realize how long it's been since they won a Super Bowl. I get that. And the Steelers want to win more Super Bowls. This is not the 1970s. You're not going to win 2-4 Super Bowls all the time. But he's had them competitive every single year. He's had them in the conversation. He's had them as a contender, despite the turnover with his assistant coaches, despite the changes in personnel. Steelers are always there. And the one constant in that is Mike Tomlin.
If and when the Steelers would part ways with Tomlin, he would become the top candidate for every vacancy that already existed. And then, beyond that, I firmly believe there would be teams who otherwise were sticking with their head coach who would say, we've changed our mind. We're going to go get Mike Tomlin. Now, you don't want to throw out the guy you have that you're happy with if you aren't sure you're going to get Mike Tomlin, but you at least may make some phone calls about whether or not you can get Mike Tomlin, because there would be teams, a lot of teams, that would say thanks for everything to a head coach they otherwise would have kept and go get Mike Tomlin if they think they can. And those Steelers fans, and it happens every year, whenever they hit adversity, there's a group of Steelers fans that want to get rid of him. Be very, very careful what you wish for, because Tomlin instantly would have multiple options at his disposal. Let's take a break. We're going to peek ahead to preseason week 2. One game has been played, 15 more still to go. We'll get you ready for the games to come when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.